Resorts World Catskills, where luxury and excitement are so close by. Catch all the sports action and so much more at Resorts World Catskills. Dial *RWCAT to learn more.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. Or look for us under Listen on the ESPN app.
All right, today, Eli Manning had his retirement at the Giants facility. And we said, you know what? Be a great time to talk to Kevin Gilbride. He was Eli's quarterback coach from 04 to 06, then promoted to offensive coordinator from 07 to 13. And by the way, last April, he was introduced as the head coach of the XFL's New York Guardians, and he joins us now. Kevin, how you doing? Michael, Don, and Peter.
I'm doing great, guys.
Now, we just had on Sean O'Hara. So he gave us the first question to ask you. You ready?
I can only imagine.
He said Eli Manning was never late for anything in his life except for one time. He said, ask Coach Gilbride. He'll tell you what time.
Well, see, that just shows you how short his career was with the Giants because it happened twice.
Uh-oh.
And both of them were my fault where my meetings ran over and I got out onto the practice field late. And unfortunately, the quarterbacks had to bear the freight of that being late, even though it was my fault. And so they wound up paying fines for being late to practice. And as I tried to explain to Tom, it wasn't their fault. It was exclusively mine, and it didn't matter. He fined them anyways.
Really? So you made the mistake, and he fined Eli?
He fined all the quarterbacks. Yes, he did. And Eli was one of the three. Kurt Warner was the other, and Jesse Palmer was the third.
Wow. Unbelievable. All right, so quarterbacks, Coach. In that room, you've got Palmer, who went on to The Bachelor, and then you have Warner, who became a Hall of Famer, Eli, who probably is going to be a Hall of Famer. What was that like, Eli's first year? What kind of learner was he?
I would say what you saw the first year, you saw throughout his entire career. I mean, the pattern was there. He was a voracious student of the game. He couldn't get enough. And even when he wasn't starting, he was putting in time in his preparation as if he was the starter. If I ever called him at night to explain, hey, I was going to call this blitz this way or that way and what have you, he would invariably answer back, you know, Coach, I was wondering what you're going to call that. I'm just looking at it right now. I mean, he would always be a day ahead. That's the kind of guy he was, and he couldn't wait. I mean, he was desperate to get in that first year. And, of course, we were doing pretty well with Kurt. But when we lost, we were 5-2, and then we lost those two games to go 5-4, and we made the change, and of course, the rest is history.
You know, it gets talked about so much. It was brought up in the press conference today by John Mara. The changing the play at the line of scrimmage to Tiki Barber to win that game against the Dallas Cowboys. And it seemed maybe meaningless in the standings at the time, but how big that was for him going forward. Did you know at that moment that that was like a big game for him moving forward?
I hoped. And you saw progress. I don't know if you guys remember back at all, but I mean, in the beginning of that, you know, his start, you know, there was that that game against Baltimore where we're trying to make declarations to the front and there are multiple walking around group and it was almost, you know, embarrassing how difficult it was for us as an offense to get through that. And of course that was one of his early games, and to see how he mastered things later on, I mean, it's just the growth was exponential. There's no question about it. And that's the way he liked it. I mean, he loved the fact that I would say, hey, we're going to call this, we'll alert to this, or we'll package it with a third play. And now the demand is on you to identify what the defense is actually doing and then get us to that right play out of those two or three plays that I sent in. And, you know, he became a master at it. And I'll give you one quick example, but always stood out to me. I mean, again, as this, you know, years went on, I would try to call him less and less at night, but every once in a while I'd say, hey, this is a real difficult blitz. I can call it this way, or I can make this declaration and make this call as the mic and then call it that way. What makes sense to you? And never not once did I ever call him. It didn't matter if it was 10 o'clock, 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. He would say, Coach, you know what? This makes more sense to me. If you can call it that way, that'd be perfect. We go into a game, and he would recognize it without fail, And there was one game where they tweaked it just a little bit. It was the Redskins. I'll never forget it. And in a matter of that play clock, he was able to decipher what adjustment they had made out of this very sophisticated blitz pattern that now people in the New York area are becoming familiar with Greg Williams. He was the Redskins coordinator then, and he managed to adjust the protection just enough that let us continue a drive down for a game-winning drive to win the game. And I'm not sure how many quarterbacks could have done that in the time frame that is available to you at the line of scrimmage.
So I'm with Kevin Gilbride. He's won two Super Bowls with the Giants as their offensive coordinator. Obviously, his connection with Eli. I always wondered this, Kevin. So you talked about his rookie year. You guys were 5-2. You lost two games, 5-4. They go to Eli. My question is, if you'd have not lost those two games and you go to 7-2, and there's a real chance to make the playoffs, was the organization dead set on getting Eli time that year, or would you have stayed with Warner?
You know what? That was above my pay grade, and they never shared that with us. Just like Ernie, of course, he never shared with us that he was going to make the trade to get Eli. I mean, that was done behind closed doors, and it was kept between him and whoever. Probably Tom was included and obviously ownership. But other than that, no one knew, and no one knew what the time frame was. I can't imagine that there would have been a change at 7-2, but I don't know.
Now, in his speech that he gave today, he singled out some people. One of them was you. What did that mean to you?
It means a lot just because of the, you know, you put in so much work and so much effort to help guys grow and reach their full potential, and to have it appreciated and recognized is always, you know, something special. And when it's done by a guy that is as hard a worker as he is, who earned my trust, and, you know, that where I could allow him to do things that I would not necessarily have allowed other quarterbacks to do, such as take over meetings after we were done on Fridays. He would then go around and meet with individual positions, the running backs, the O-line, the receivers, and just reinforce the things that we had gone over and emphasized and accentuated all week long. You know, it's nice to think that your quarterback is an extension of you. In this case, there's no question he was. He was definitely the brains out on the field.
Now, we were just kind of joking around earlier, trying to predict exactly what he meant when he called Giant fans unique. And we thought that was maybe him taking a little dig, saying, I heard the criticism. I heard that you weren't completely on board. Do you think early on he heard the boos or heard the criticisms from talk radio and the newspapers and the pressures of that trade and maybe early on in his career not living up to the expectations?
You know what? It would not surprise me that he was cognizant of those things. The best part about him, though, is not only does he not show it, he doesn't even share it with anybody. And, you know, he keeps all that stuff inside. So if it did bother him, it was never once, not ever, discussed. It was never brought up. And if you started to say something along those lines, hey, don't listen, you know, he would just dismiss it out of hand immediately. So he's got that wall that he puts up that he does not allow, you know, the public to get in terms of affecting him or affecting his approach or his professionalism or the way he goes about his business. He is very, very single-minded. I mean, he's incredible that way, and that all he cares about is getting ready that week for that game and doing whatever he can to help his team win.
Coach, why do we have to spend so much time during the week on this show debating with people about whether or not he's a Hall of Famer? I don't see the debate. Help me out. Is there a debate?
Not in my mind. You know, as I look at it and think about it, we had a lot of good players, but we didn't necessarily have other Hall of Famers. And I think you look at Strahan was there that 2007 on the defensive side. I'm not sure who else is going to make the Hall of Fame besides him. And when you think of it in that context and what we were able to achieve in that 2011, I mean, I think we won 6 or 7 games. I'm not exactly sure which on a last minute drive. And two of those games, we scored twice in the last 4 minutes in order to win games. I mean, there's no question in my mind that he's special, and the fact that we have two Super Bowls is very much attributable to what his contributions were.
All right, tell us about the Guardians in this new league.
Well, we just finished training camp. We were down there for 3 weeks, and we just came back. We're starting up again Monday. We'll have a week of just kind of a continuation of the of the training camp, and then we get down to business getting ready to play the Tampa Bay Vipers, who we finished up with an exhibition game. So somewhat unique. You know, you have an exhibition game, and it's against the team you're going to open up with. Not what I ever experienced in the NFL, but it's a different approach, and our broadcast partners wanted to see the two teams in action before they actually covered us live on February 9th. It's been good. It's been interesting. You get a lot of guys who are hungry to play or hungry to, you know, have a second shot and grow and learn and develop. So it's been fun for me, and the time schedule of, you know, once you're there with these guys, I mean, it's just like working the NFL. But the good thing for me was in the off season, I was able to do the work at home and spend time with my grandkids, which is the reason I retired in the first place.
Now, Kevin, you know, I like to, you know, be creative here. Eli's dad said today the only difficult part about the retirement was he feels great. He's not banged up. He's not injured. And Eli said he thought he could still play. Give him a call. He just wanted to be a Giant. There's no other NFL team. Maybe he'll play for the Guardians.
Somehow I don't think that's going to happen, but I appreciate the offer.
Who's your quarterback?
You could call him. You could put it in his a bug in his ear.
All right. Who's your quarterback?
Well, we've got three of them. We've got Mac McGloin, Marquise Williams, and then Juan Perez. And, you know, right now McGloin is the starter. I don't know if you guys remember him from Penn State.
Yeah.
He actually started for the Raiders for a couple of years, bounced around for about 4 or 5 years, and we feel very fortunate to have him.
What do you think about some of these new rules that they've implemented, the point afters and things like that? Seem pretty inventive.
Yeah, it's all about the fans. They're really going out of their way to make sure that the experience is fan friendly. It's a faster paced game. There's no, you know, even the overtime is from the 5 yard line. You get 5 shots each team. You go once, the other team goes, then you come back. I mean, there's nothing long and drawn out. There's really an accentuation on the kicking game. You know, we always talk as coaches, it's one third, one third, one third. Well, it better be one third, one third, one third in this game, because you have to kick the ball inbounds and give the returners in a chance to return their punts or kickoffs. Much, much different than the NFL, like where you would angle punt and try to kick it out of bounds. Well, the penalty is so severe now that if you did that, the ball would come out to the 35-yard line. So no one's kicking it into the end zone on kickoff. No one's kicking it out of bounds. You're going to have to kick. You're going to have to defend. And hopefully you got a pretty good returner.
Coach, you've always been great with us. Thank you for popping on. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, good luck with the XFL. We'll come back. We'll take some phone calls. We have a big ENN.
Huge.
Coming up as well. Big show. Big Friday show. Next Friday's our Super Bowl show.
That's correct.
And we're going to be doing it from Eli's first place he lived when he was a kid, Hoboken.
That's correct.
Yeah. All ties together.
It really does.
1-800-919-3776. Kayla Greco, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
That's right, man.
Don't miss Michael, Don, and Peter weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. Or look for us under Listen on the ESPN app.